order our Joint Ways and Means Committee on Education for Monday, February 13th. And first I want to say Representative Comp is ill and we're missing her today. So she certainly has a legitimate reason for not being here. So now I want to, we have four reports from Department of Ed that we're going to be looking at, or three. So I'm going to open a work session. Open it on all three.
Do individually because there'll be a vote.
Okay. So I'm going to open a work session on the Department of Ed report on budget implementation for operations. And looks like we have the superintendent and Duncan Wise on that one. And I'm going to come back to this.
Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, as you're probably aware, although you do have one new member, so that kind of set the stage, the series of reports that are before you today are in direct response to budget notes that were adopted during the last session. The first two were in response to some budget reductions and some direction that you gave formally and informally on what you were authorizing from reduction lists during the session, and items that you asked them to attempt to hold harmless. So they were asked to come back and report as to how they were going to implement their budget and what they're able to accomplish in anything that may have happened in the intervening 7 months. So that's what the first report is. Okay. So please, whoever's going to kick this off.
So I think I'll launch today and joined by my colleagues. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Duncan Wise. I'm a member of the State Board of Education. I've been on it for 8 years now almost. And today I'm representing the board on behalf of both of this topic and the next one on the auditor. Before I begin, I just want to compliment you all. This is the first time I've been for this committee since the end of the last session, and it was, of course, quite a flurry of activity related to education. And as one observer, I would just say it was the most productive, amazing session on education in my memory, probably in history. You did an amazing amount of work, and I think all of us involved in implementing your work, we're really, really pleased to see what you did. I would also point out that your work led to a lot of work, and in the last 7 months, we have been extraordinarily busy on the board and at the department staff. I will tell you, across the education agencies, but in particular with the Department of Education, you have a wonderful team working for you. They have seen significant challenges with budget cuts and an incredible workload. And in this period where you see, I think, more change and a lot more uncertainty than any time in my recollection, I will say the superintendent in particular has been extraordinary in her leadership in just holding the team together and focused not only on the immediate work but also encouraging people to think broadly about the future. And the staff from Ed Dennis and all the way down to the team, I just have been really, really impressed with the amount of work that's been accomplished in a period of really dramatic change. And just to remind you of the stakes, while we're doing a lot of work with the investment board and the redesign of all the services in education, there's a lot of ongoing work that you're aware of. For example, the high school diploma requirements. This year, high school seniors for the first time are being asked to demonstrate mastery in reading. Next year, writing, and the year after, reading, writing, and math. All that is going on. The assessment tools have to be developed. The different methods have to be prepared for students. We need to keep all that work on track. We have to also be implementing the Common Core standards, involved with the national folks when designing that. I would tell you that the team of staff were very engaged in that work. I think Oregon was highly influential in developing the Common Core standards, as well as now the assessment system related to them. So a lot is going on in the baseline work, as well as the work that you have asked for in the last session. So all that is by way of saying that you asked for a report on implementation. It was due in December, and we're a little late. It's March. We'll be doing it in March, and I think there was a very simple reason for that. Staff was overwhelmed with other work, in particular the No Child Left Behind waiver. This work is underway. The board received a first draft of the report on the operational plan for the department in the January meeting. We'll be ready in March, and we'll have that available. We've got a draft. I hope you've seen it, have a chance to look at it. And as one board member, I will tell you that if you have comments here or afterwards, feel free to offer them to me, and I'll make sure we consider them as we put this together. So that's briefly where we are. So you did ask us to take a look at the department's work in light of significant budget cuts. Remind you that the 2011-13 current service budget level was cut by 25% or $10 million, and so it was a substantial cut. We reviewed the draft plan at the January meeting, and again, the staff pulled it together. I think it's really a very clear document. It's a nice summary. It's one of the better I've seen of our department operations, and so we reviewed it at that meeting, and again, we'll come back in March. In terms of the strategies to reduce expenses, we've tried to, of course, look at the core functions of the department. We have things that we have to do really well. And we've tried to, as much as possible, minimize the impacts of the cuts on the districts and on the core services. One strategy has been to move more money to federal funds, frankly. If you go back historically, we have shifted dramatically from the amount of the staff activity at the department that is paid for by the general fund. Now it's about 57% are covered by federal funds. That does involve both risk and a little bit more encumbrance. Obviously, the federal funds are tied to specific activities, and in some cases, they're grants that we won't necessarily be able to depend on in the long term. And so that's a bit of a challenge, but we've been able to use federal funds. Of course, with your help, the department has reduced the number of mandates that on the districts, and that's again reduced costs and time by the board. For example, the athletic association, we no longer review boundaries of the athletics, and that, I will tell you, is a very time-consuming activity for the board, and I expect took substantial staff resources as well. But again, the Senate Bill 800, I think, waived mandates, and the staff is looking for additional opportunities to do that. The staff has we've looked at timelines, found efficiencies. The child nutrition staff moved the staff over to the public service building, shrunk the size of the cubicles for staff. They have very good will about that. So a number of steps that you'll be able to see in the report. Again, the key is to keep to the core work. We've got to have great standards, great assessments. We've got to communicate with the field. We've got to make sure we have the data system continues to be built. And all that work, again, we're trying to protect as we deal with cuts in the budget. And so in terms of the strategy and the longer-term vision for staff deployment, the governor invited all the board members and Superintendent Castillo to meet with him to really talk about the vision of the investment board and the role of all the agencies in this new vision. And we have committed to him, as the investment board does its work, on thinking about the overall architecture for education to be actively engaged. And so along with the report that we'll produce in March, I think you can expect us to be very engaged with that larger work, so that by the time you come back, you'll have a new model, if you will, for education, governance, and delivery, and the roles and responsibilities of all the folks working at the state level. And I think that's what you should expect and can expect. And I can tell you, we're all really engaged, and we'll be actively engaged in that conversation. So Sue has done a lot of the work with the rest of the staff, can go into any of the details on the budgets. But I want to just re-stress, if you have reflections, things we ought to be considering, please let me know now or offline. I'd be happy to take that under your advisement as we put the final report together. Thank you.
Just a point of clarification that I have, Duncan. Thank you for your time and efforts on this. As I look at the agency actions section of the report here, and you alluded to it, actually didn't allude to it, you spoke to it in your statement there, mm-hmm. So I'm assuming that this report has not yet been finalized by the board.
Correct.
And adopted by the board, and that is why we're calling it preliminary.
Mm-hmm.
You anticipating any substantial changes? Are you anticipating any changes?
Well, I would expect some, because the board is the board, and I just know my members and my colleagues, and we'll make, yes, I would some, but I don't know yet how many. We did review it at the January meeting. We don't meet in February. By the way, we have cut down board meetings to save money, so we will actually be March. And I honestly don't know. I've done some thinking on it, and again, if you have reflections on things you'd like to see, I would be more than open. The main thing, if I were to add anything, I would just reiterate what I consider the core functions of the department, things that I would want you to know about that we, I think, are absolutely critical for the overall education system, and that is we've got to have really strong, clear standards. We've got to have a really good assessment system. We've got to have a really good data system. We need to communicate that system and make that available to the field in a way that helps students really master material. I think that's a critical piece, and we've got to make sure we protect that. That would be a feature that I would want to emphasize in the report. And I think Sue and I think the budget staff recognize that, and sort of the superintendent does, and doing their best to do that. So I might emphasize some things in here, but again, if there's any features or questions you have, I think we'd be more than eager to respond to them in terms of this report. So again, now or as we put it together, we have a little time, and we'd be happy to do that.
Okay. Do you have anything that you'd like to add to this at this point before I go to the rest of this committee for questions?
Madam Chair, Susan Castillo, State Superintendent of Public Instruction for Oregon. I guess I would, to follow up on your question to Duncan, when we did present this to the board, there were maybe a few questions, but I think mostly just comments about just taking a look at this report and having it captured here for them. They really found that helpful. And so we will, you know, continue to be engaged with them on any tweaks or changes, but I don't imagine this changing significantly. I don't think so, but there may be some tweaks to it by some of the members, and it might be something like they might want to add something to it, a priority maybe based on their own individual interests, or as Duncan said, just maybe really wanting to strengthen some of the language around the core functions.
Representative Burr.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Duncan, when you talk about the board making some changes, since this is a Ways and Means Committee, and normally we don't address policy, but we do address policy an awful lot.
Really?
Some of these minor changes that the board might, would any of those, and Ms. Castillo, if you would like to chime in on this too, would any of them impact financially?
Well, if they did, it would be more managing to that in terms of what we have it captured in this document. And so as we have continued to reallocate the resources or reprioritize where the dollars are in here to be in line with the work, the legislation you passed, the priorities of the state, that we would just continue to do that and make some decisions about what we will not do in order to address the direction.
Thank you very much for that.
I guess my answer, I think this is we have a pretty solid budget plan in place in terms of allocation. I wouldn't anticipate a lot of change. It's really more to the work, you know, specific work product you might be emphasizing a little here or there, but I don't think it's anything fundamental in budget structure at this point that I can see.
Any other questions or comments? Okay. So, Senator Monroe.
We on track to get the waiver from No Child Left Behind?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senator Monroe, I believe so. We have been engaged with the federal members of the federal Department of Education and some national experts across the country that are helping with the process, getting great feedback and advice, working with other states that have received a waiver, and working together with our partners. We've really been engaging people across the state and keeping people engaged in the work that we're doing, working very closely with the governor and his staff. The word from the federal government is they want every state that wants a waiver to get a waiver, and they're going to be working with us on helping us achieve that. What kind of flexibility we will still be able to have in our plan, what we want, what they're willing to move on and negotiate with us, we'll see in this process. But we're feeling very optimistic that we are going to get this waiver. And the decision will probably come this spring. In March is when our peer review process will happen. And then we should know not too long after that. They're ramping up because they know a number of states are going to be submitting in this next round for the waivers. So they're staffing up and getting ready so they can do a turnaround in a timely manner for us, because they know that all of us have big systems that we're running to implement the changes that are in our waiver applications, and that we need to get that going as soon as possible.
Thank you. Just a bit of a follow-up. I feel very strongly about this. I was very pleased that the Obama administration took the action they did to encourage states to go for a waiver. I was very pleased that our governor anticipates this and is certainly in favor of a waiver. I've had problems with No Child Left Behind for a long time. As an educator, I believe that although it was good intentioned, it hasn't worked out very well. And so do everything you can to make sure we get that waiver.
We will, Senator.
Madam Chair, Senator Monroe, I would just stress there is a bill coming your way that would make a big difference in that, and for the Achievement Compact. And we would encourage you, the board recommends adoption of that bill, and certainly a large set of constituencies also support it. So I agree. I think No Child Left Behind has run its course. It had some value, but it's a straitjacket at this point in terms of the assessment system and the way the accountability system works. The Achievement Compact design, again, the department worked really closely with Ben Cannon and the governor's team. It was an excellent piece of work. And, again, bringing a lot of constituencies, it's ready to go, and the Achievement Compact is a critical part of it. So, again, it'll be coming your way very soon, as I understand it. So,
Representative Dimbro, you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Susan Duncan, I wonder if you could follow up a little more on the relationship between the department and the board and the new investment board in this kind of area. You know, that is, you know, we know that the investment board is going to be involved in the development of the new budget, but how about in terms of implementation of the existing budget? Are they, you know, to what extent are they conversant with the report, or will be conversant with the report and be involved in its refinement?
I'll take a stab at that, Madam Chair, Representative Dimbro. I mean, I think, again, the governor called all the board and the principals, Susan Castillo, together and said, we're going to be looking at organization design, and we want you part of it, both in terms of board role and staff role in this new design. And it was very open with all of us, saying we're going to be looking at ways to manage and govern differently, and we anticipate that work, you know, as under the guidance of the Chief Education Officer to continue the rest of the year, and expect to have a report to you for the 2013 session. I don't think anything, you know, there'll be some direction, assuming you adopt the legislation, for the Chief Education Officer to have some direction in terms of the board's work. But I think what we heard was that in the meantime, we should continue to do our work, and we are. Understanding that a lot of change is going on, we have to keep, there's a lot of things we have to keep moving. And so at this point, I would not anticipate a lot of redirection, other than I think all of us are, you know, responding to the requests and needs as this moves on. But I think at the same time, we're all saying we've got to continue to do the work we've got, and the work right now is really important. We've got, especially I would stress, folks in high school right now are being challenged to meet higher standards with the new diploma, and that requires a lot of work. And so we're going to be all working both on the investment board vision and helping support it, but at the same time making sure that the train's running on the path we're on.
Madam Chair and members of the committee and Representative Dimbro, we're working really closely together, the governor's office and my staff, and we're very, very engaged in the work, working very hard to make sure that we're aligned with the direction that the governor is leading and the legislation that you passed this last session, really trying to align all of the work and making sure that the work that we're doing at the department is aligned with that work, and that we are continually, we meet regularly to make sure that we are communicating well, and the needs of the OEIB are being met, and that our role in helping with that is on track. So we're we're really engaged in the work, and we'll continue that and want to be as helpful as we can as we're going this new direction.
I would point out that I'm seeing a lot more emails in the evening time from senior staff and from the ODE. I mean, people are working like really long hours right now to make sure they're juggling all these different responsibilities.
Do you have a follow-up?
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, and I really appreciate the difficulty of, you know, you're being in this kind of transitional period, and I hope that we can all recognize that this first go-round is going to be very transitional, right? And for the preparation of the next budget is in part going to be a learning opportunity, I think, for us all. And so I think, you know, in my opinion, you're going to have to be given a certain amount of leeway as we're all finding our way with it. Well, one of the concerns that I have, you know, in terms of the viability of the department, I mean, the challenges that the department faces will be, you know, I know that there is the plan that's in the works is that with the development of the achievement compacts and then the monitoring of the achievement compacts, and, you know, if districts are not able to meet their goals, the department is going to be expected to step in and give them support and, help them to improve their performance. I'm concerned about the capacity of the department to do that, given the cuts you've been sustaining and just all of this work that you're doing. So I don't know if you want to comment on that.
Members of the committee, we are concerned about the capacity issues as well, and so it is about prioritizing and making tough decisions about what we're not going to do so that we can be as helpful as we can in the direction that we're going. In our waiver, we definitely talk about building a different kind of system of support, a more customized system of support for our schools that are struggling, instead of Senator Monroe alluded to the very, cookie cutter approach and, one size fits all approach of No Child Left Behind. And so that also is about capacity building as well. And so it's not just at the department level that we're concerned about as far as capacity goes. It is in our districts as well and their capacity to be able to have what they need to work on school improvement and to meet new requirements that are coming, or working on the new relationship that's going to be developed between the OEIB and our school districts. So I think it's exciting work, but we do still have a lot to figure out together. And our commitment is that, the direction we're going, it'll just be all of us working together to make different kinds of decisions about how we're going to do it.
Senator Gerard, you had a...
I don't know. I just have a comment as well, following up on the No Child Left Behind. I agree fully that the state needs to get a waiver, and I think that is a program that's failed, and I think the reason that it fails is simple economics. If you do a graph, cost on one side and number of children as a percent on the lower bar, after a while, there's just a huge turn up in the curve. And basically, to get to no child or zero, it's almost an infinite cost. In short, the cost at the margin just goes up so tremendously, it's not doable. So I think that's a failed policy, and I do believe very strongly that the state should do what it can to get a waiver to get out from under it.
Thanks.
Thank you. Okay. Any other questions? So then... if you would hold off just a second, Senator. Yes, we do need a motion. And so, Monica, we're making a motion on the report as we have it, knowing that this could be a fluid process,
right?
Given the board's
now, I understand your question
March
a little better because you have
meeting.
To, you're wanting to adopt this.
Yeah. So,
well, the motion, Madam Chair, I move that we acknowledge receipt of the report from the Department of Education on strategic budget plan.
Motion's been made. Any discussion on that motion? Any objection to that motion? So the motion carries. Thank you for that. And we need a carrier for that.
Oh, before Ways and Means?
Yes.
I think Rod volunteered. I volunteer Rod.
I would be happy to carry it.
Be willing to do that. Thank you.
Actually, I could do that.
We just need a carrier for Ways and Means, right?
Yes.
Ways and Means. You're spared, gentlemen.
It's only temporary.
The next one's
true,
coming.
True. Okay. Now we have another report. Looks like probably the same panel. I need to close the work session.
Close
the work session on the Department of Ed report on budget implementation for operations. And I would open a work session for the Department of Ed report on internal auditor.
So,
and Duncan,
Chair,
it looks like you're poised to kick this off again.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Duncan Wise, member of the Board of Education. I'd like to speak to the internal auditor position. As you know, the department's former auditor was lost due to an earlier budget cut. And we have an internal audit committee that's continued, and the board does have a representative on that committee, and we receive regular reports on it. The 2011-13 budget funded an auditor position that would be shared with CCWD for 18 months, and assuming this position would be filled in January. The plan was to interview for the position in December. However, the department decided to delay it until February to save a month's salary. And we were just about to hire the position when there was a hiring freeze by the governor, and so we are stalled. The board and department staff have worked with CCWD management to create an acceptable position and description, engage the audit committee for a review and approval of the position description, and invited CCWD's contractor auditor to be a member of the audit committee. Should ODE's budget be reduced, the agency may need to consider further delay in hiring, and with the hiring freeze not lifted, I'm simply not able to do it now. I think the board and you all agree this is important. We need to get this done, and we're looking for ways to do it. But again, as of right now, with the freeze, as I understand it, we're a little bit stuck. So, Sue or Susan, again, we will be involved in the decision to hire when that comes up. And again, we would hope that we can do this soon. Sue, do you know?
Anything further from
That's
anybody
it.
Else? Senator Gerard, are you in the queue? I heard that. I'll let you kick it off.
We've had a real problem getting audits from your department, and so I know that things are tight, and I know that this, but it just looks to me like this is a convenient excuse. I'm just trying to state the obvious, and the reason for my gasp up here. So.
You want to go first? You want me to go first?
Sue McGlashan with the Oregon Department of Education, for the record. Co-chair and members of the subcommittee, I think that might have come from an issue that arose last session where there were requests for our, and I'm going to use quotation marks, audit, when it really was our budget numbers going through the DAS review process. That was the delay. We're not in charge of their timeline, and they have all agencies to get through their review process to provide audited budget numbers to the legislature, and that was a delay. As I stated last session, I'm not aware of any audit reports that have been requested by the subcommittee or others that have ever been delayed, whether they be Secretary of State audit, division audits, federal audits, internal audits when we had an internal auditor. So the decision was made with the hiring freeze and with the budget cuts that we would delay this 1 month beyond the assumed hiring date in the budget. Pardon me, 1 month beyond the assumed hiring date in the budget with the budget cuts. And then when the hiring freeze came about, we decided we would probably have to delay that one more month because this is possibly what would be considered a new program, which both the governor and the legislature asked agencies to look at very closely and suspend or delay if possible. So with all due respect, Senator Gerard, we're not trying to delay this for any reason other than the one stated.
Well, I'm still gasping.
So I've got a couple thoughts on that, but Monica, you look eager to share something with us. I hope it assuages some of these concerns.
I just want to address the question that was put out there, and I think Ms. McGlashan addressed most of that, but I just wanted to confirm that was our understanding as well as far as the missed audits last time. There was a misunderstanding of what audit versus SABR review was, and it was a SABR review hang-up going through that audit piece. The other components, however, in the 2009-11 budget, this committee voted and the full committee voted to eliminate the auditor position as part of budget reductions with the understanding that the agency would continue their internal audit committee with other staff that were there, and they were left with $25,000 in services supplies budget to contract out for audits at that time. So that work has sort of been limping along, and it did through 09-11 and into this current biennium. The position that was authorized this last session was an attempt to take on some efficiencies. The governor's budget came forward and had an internal audit position partially funded with general fund dollars in community colleges and workforce development. So sort of the synergy was to take the general fund that was already carved out from that position, take the $25,000 from the Departments of Education's budget, and fund one full position reporting to the state board to make sure that those risk assessments and some sort of an audit function was happening. So the timeline of the freeze, for hiring freeze, is sequential in that process. I think the action to the chair's question here offline was, okay, what can you do from there? Mm-hmm. While you can't directly tell the Department of Administrative Services to pass things through their hiring freeze, I think a vote or an urging of the subcommittee to say this is important, we're acknowledging this receipt of the report, and would ask that DAS offer due consideration to exempting this from the hiring freeze if it's important to this committee. I suspect, I don't know, I have a DAS representative back there sort of nodding his head, that they would entertain that before the exception committee, and if they want to go forward with a hire. So you have to kind of weigh that balance.
Okay, I appreciate that. What Monica's referring to is that I was sitting here thinking, so what can we do? Just the fact that there's been a hiring freeze and there's budget constraints doesn't mean the initial concern is gone. And so I'm still looking at ways that we can address that. And I think lots of people have something to say, so I want to hear from the committee first. Representative Garrard.
A question for Ms. Brown. What are the ramifications of not accepting the report?
Madam Chair and Representative Garrard, it's probably a distinction with little difference. You can either accept it or not. The status is the hiring freeze is still on. Their budget is still the status as it is, and the position isn't filled. So you've received the report. So you're acknowledging that, yes, they've done the due diligence up to the point that they can. Then I think your option is really, do you want to comment further and urge them one direction or another? Given the other lists that you have seen and the co-chair's budget, how do you kind of feel about continuing to leave this position vacant for a few more months to help them assist with other reductions that could be coming? Or you want to give them direction that this is number one priority, move forward and encourage the Department of Administrative Services to allow them to hire. So
quick follow then.
Follow-up.
Then this committee really should send a message.
Probably not a bad idea.
That we want the freeze lowered for this one position because we feel the urgency of this is needed for this position. Am I on the right track?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, and something, I know you have something to say there, Sue, but I'm going to piggyback on that. You've all seen it, I'm sure, and it's here. The report is 3 pages with a cover letter that I'm looking at here, and the report says we couldn't. I think adopting this report is actually a good thing to do because it's documenting those reasons and why I think it gives us even greater need if we do choose to move forward to do that. Because this report just simply documents that some of those reasons. Who did I have next? Did I have you, Representative Dembrough?
Maybe, yes, Madam Chair. I'm glad. I appreciate Monica's raising that suggestion about sending a letter to the Exceptions Committee. I think I would prefer if we didn't do that today, though. I'd like to think about it a little more, just because this is certainly, I think, a priority and a priority for this committee. But, you know, I'm sure that a lot of people are contacting that committee for exceptions. And I'm not sure, just speaking for myself, how high up on, the list that this would be for me in terms of, you know, if you could make one exception, make it this one. I'm not saying that I wouldn't get to that point at some time, but I'd like to think about it a little more if I could.
Okay. Senator Giroir.
Well, I'd like to go along with Representative Girard. Only exception to that is I'm not so sure we need one more FTE. I just think that, I mean, this is a huge agency, and I think that we can find it within. Now, if we are going to be a functional committee, we have to have something to look at. That's what an audit's all about, and that's what the legislature is supposed to oversee. So to me, it's just kind of a snub to the legislature saying, this isn't important to you. We answer to the governor, and that eventually is going to go that way. But I just feel that I'm not willing to give up my function as a senator in the oversight process. So that's my feeling.
Sue. Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, Sue McGlashan with the ODE for the record. And I kind of feel like the conversation is drifting towards the agency doesn't want to have an internal audit function, and I'd just like to clarify that that's not the case and draw your attention to the letter that we submitted to you, the letter dated January 27th, wherein we said in order to respond to the 3.5% reduction, we would delay hiring that position for 1 month until February 1st. The original hire date being January 1st, as approved by the legislature and funding provided in our budget. Then when the hiring freeze direction came out from the governor and the legislature, we said, well, again, probably a new program. We will delay until March 1st. In our letter, what we go on to say is if the hiring freeze is not lifted, then we will likely need to ask for an exception. So the plan for the agency is, assuming you don't make drastic cuts to our budget in February, and I just want to plug that, we will go forward with this hire. So I just want to clarify for the agency that we are not walking away from it. We heard you loud and clear last session when you said you wanted us to have this function. We think it's a necessary function. Personally, I think having an audit background myself, I don't think one person is enough for an agency our size and for all the programs we have, and so I would say give us more. But I just want to clarify for you that we are not trying to avoid hiring this position. Thank you.
Senator Monroe, you're in the queue.
Yes, a couple of points. First of all, acknowledging the receipt of the report is not the same as accepting the report. It's not the same as approving the report. It's acknowledging the receipt of the report, and that's normally what we do. I believe that we need to also, and maybe we want to hear from Jim back there, but we also need to instruct that the audit position is very important and ask DAS to make an exception to allow that hire, make an exception to their freeze to allow that hire. So that'd be my recommendation, is that we acknowledge the receipt of the report and send a note with it to DAS asking them to make an exception and to allow this hire ASAP.
Senator Giroir.
I don't want to beat a dead horse, but we're acknowledging the receipt of a report that there's no report. Am I wrong in that? I mean, they're giving. That's my summation of what we're doing here. We're acknowledging a report, but there is no report.
Madam Chair.
Hold on just a second, please. Monica's dying to have a point of clarification here, and if she doesn't say what I wanted to say, then I'm going to tie in right behind her.
Okay. And just to clarify for the senator's question, what you directed them to do through budget note was to report in on their progress to recruit and retain and do the risk assessments. Their letter did report in on their ability to recruit and retain, which didn't get all the progress that you wanted, but then it did acknowledge, well, because we weren't able to retain one because of the mitigating circumstances, they don't have a risk assessment. So, I mean, they have done what you've asked them to do. Now, the outcome is probably not the report you had hoped to have, but they have reported in on the aspects that you wanted them to report in on. As the person who crafted the budget note on the subcommittee's behest, I think that they have met the intent of the thinking at the time when it was drafted during session. Representative Gerard.
I totally disagree.
And you get to vote.
I thought so. I
have to follow Senator Gerard here in that it's a report on internal auditor. There is no internal auditor, so how can there be a report?
Point well taken. I'm just going to throw something out there, food for thought. I am just as disappointed, frankly, in what this report, and I've gone through it here many times, what this report or lack of report is saying. I don't endorse it. I'm not thrilled with it. The only reason I would recommend that we accept it is I think it is appropriate documentation. Not that I necessarily agree with all the reasoning. Whether I do or I don't is irrelevant. It's appropriate documentation to the task that was put forth and the reasons why that task wasn't completed. So I just offer that up. And then did I... Sue.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee. Just one other comment and then I'll be quiet. I also kind of get the impression that perhaps if we, that you might think that if we had hired the internal auditor on January 1st, you would have a risk assessment in front of you. Those are can be rather lengthy. And in fact, when the audit committee and the CCWD folks and others internal to ODE sat down and looked at the position description that we had for the prior internal auditor, we all acknowledged that doing risk assessments for two agencies would probably take a fair amount of time from that person for the first year that they were on board. And so I just want to put out there on the record that had we hired that position January 1st, you probably still would not have a risk assessment, a final risk assessment in front of you for one or both agencies. So if that's at all factoring into your disappointment, I just want to disappoint you some more, I guess. We would not have had it at this time.
Okay. Senator Monroe, and then I have something maybe to frame this for us a little bit.
The budget note from 2 years ago asked them to report on their progress in recruiting and hiring an internal auditor. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what this report does. It reports on their, in this case, lack of progress and gives some reasons why, but it does essentially fulfill what we asked them to do. It didn't get us an auditor, but that's why, besides acknowledging the receipt of the report, we need to add a note to DAS asking them to make an exception of the hiring freeze in this particular instance to allow them to go forward immediately with the search and the hiring.
So I'm going to offer something up to say that I'm sensing some angst would be an understatement. And what I would just throw out, kind of going on the fly here a little bit, is there's a huge amount of discomfort right now, clearly, and I don't want people feeling backed into a corner. And I think that might be occurring, and I don't want to grow that by any means. And we are missing a co-chair here today. So I would suggest, as just an option, that this be, I hesitate in saying this because of our short session, but roll this over to Wednesday, perhaps, and it allows us to also do some work. I'm looking at you here, Monica, intently for a reason. Allows us to do some work to put together a proposal, an amendment, whatever it is we need to do as far as if we can gain some agreement here lifting that hiring freeze. But I don't sense that there is any great level of comfort approving this report and moving it forward, and opposed to asking for a vote that I don't see that we can get to. That would be my recommendation.
Now, moving this to Wednesday and giving Monica the opportunity to maybe draft a letter along the lines or a note along the lines that I suggested to DAS would be fine. That way we would have an opportunity to have that in front of us when we're actually voting on acknowledging this report.
Senator Durant?
I just have to say, when the footnote was read, the assumption is go get an auditor. I mean, that was the assumption of the footnote, and report back to us how you've done it with this. They've talked about the problems that they've had, but I just, to what I said before, you're accepting a report that there really is no report. So, as Monica says, we can say that we're not going to accept a report because we're not happy with the outcome. It really doesn't matter at tinker's darn one way or another. It really truly doesn't. But I think that we need to make it loud and clear that they do need to hire an auditor, and if they can't find the money outside through a new FTE, then they need to do it internally. I mean, that's my own personal feeling.
Madam Chair.
Actually, if you could hold on just a second, Senator. Representative Gerard, I'm going to put you on the spot. And is that something you'd be comfortable with, holding this over, and not taking that vote right now?
Yeah, I think we're, to a degree, discussing semantics and what was the true intent of the legislature. Mm-hmm. And that's what leads me to say our intent wasn't for a report on how successful you are at getting an auditor.
Senator Monroe?
Yeah, and just reiterating what I said before, we're not accepting the report. Mm-hmm. We're acknowledging the receipt of the report. I think there's a significant difference there.
Mm-hmm. And I see that point. I think at this point what we're going to do is hold this over to Wednesday, Monica, and I think there was some clear direction. Any question left in that as far as the accompanying letter? Okay. So I am going to hold over the Department of Ed report on the internal auditor, a vote or a decision on that until the February 15th meeting. Is that going to be correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And then I'm going to close the work session on the report on the internal auditor. And then do I open these separately or can they be the same since they're tied together?
You can do it separately. You can open them both. You'll need two separate votes to acknowledge, and then
I'll just do one. Next, I'm going to open a work session on the Department of Ed report on long-term care and treatment and the discussion of the other funds expenditure limitation.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Nancy Latini, the Assistant Superintendent for the Office of Student Learning and Partnerships at the Department. First of all, I want to thank you for your interest in the students placed in long-term care and treatment services. As you know, these programs offer both education and mental health services to students who are in day treatment and residential treatment programs. These students are identified as having mental health needs to the extent that it's really difficult for them to succeed in a regular school. They need something beyond that. And most often, there's been a variety of interventions that have been tried unsuccessfully by the school district as well as community support services. Primarily, these students are placed by the Department of Human Services and the Oregon Youth Authority, but districts and families also access these programs for students. Often, it's a team effort that you'll see in looking at what are the appropriate services for these students. Other times, however, they have emergency placements because of family situations, and those team efforts don't continue. We're here today to summarize and report and respond to any questions you might have on a report that we recently submitted regarding a budget note on the long-term care and treatment programs. In the budget note, the department was directed to convene a stakeholders work group and to address the concerns and findings that were identified in a report on long-term care and treatment programs, which was completed by the American Institutes and Research. In Oregon, we call it the Tom Parrish Report because it reflects the contractor who actually conducted the study. The budget note further then directed us to have the stakeholder group look at all the recommendations and address particularly the equity in funding and the appropriate levels of education for these students. Before we discuss the recommendations from the stakeholders, I want to briefly tell you what our process was in order to get to these recommendations. We held four meetings. The first meeting we held, we opened it to anybody in the long-term care and treatment community who was interested in services for these children. In that meeting, there were about 40 people, and they came from, they were teachers, there were mental health service providers, there were administrators of the, both the education program and the mental health services, and we even had school district business managers come to this meeting. And they were from ESDs and from school districts. They were asked to share with us what was working, what maybe should be enhanced, and what recommendations we should be considering from them. And because it was such a broad group, we had a lot of different conversations and a lot of different comments that we put together. Those comments are summarized and they are at the end of the report that we submitted. That meeting then was followed by a much smaller meeting, and it was with some administrators, legislative advocates, and the department staff. We included Brian Reeder in this meeting, as well as Sue McGlashan and her staff, and we focused only on the funding options. We talked about what the pros and cons, we looked at all the history, and we did come up with a recommendation for funding. The third meeting we had then was, we also offered video conferencing to address some of the needs of people that had to travel in for just a one-day meeting. And these people then were allowed to weigh in with the recommendations from that smaller group, anything else that they wanted to add, and also then to look at some of the other items that were of concern in the report, like the number of days, length of instruction, what is there a common assessment so we can really measure outcomes for students. And then we had a final meeting where every participant got a very, very draft report that they could then comment on or tell us what we forgot or tell us what they wanted to highlight. These meetings definitely showed the passion and interest in trying to meet the needs of these students who have both education needs, of course, and mental health services. We especially are thankful for the legislative advocates who participated with us. They weren't afraid to ask the tough questions, and that allowed other people, the teachers, not to be afraid to say, well, what about this or what about that? So we really felt we had some open conversations. We have every intention to continue the relationship with these advocates and include them as we go through the next steps in this process. This to us is just the beginning of making sure that our long-term care and treatment program is one of the best there is for these students. Julie York is here as the Director of Interagency Services to answer any of the more detailed questions about the report. And I guess we do have time, so I'm not going to be real worried about your time. But we have some options as far as what you want to do and let you decide those.
Okay. Do we have any questions thus far?
What I can say is we can briefly go through all of the recommendations for you so you can ask questions. We can look at primarily the funding one, which was a big issue for all of us as we talked about this that we hadn't addressed at all, or we can listen to your questions first and report later.
Why don't you go ahead, please?
Yes, sir. The recommendation?
Sure. Co-Chair Springer and Co-Chair Monroe, I appreciate the opportunity. I'm Julie York, as Nancy mentioned, Director of Interagency Educational Services, so this is one of the programs that I oversee. If you look at the first page of the report where we summarize the basis of the report, the first one, and as Nancy alluded to, the largest, was really looking at a different funding formula. Some key issues that have come up historically, and I don't have the history of how we ever decided that a residential treatment versus a day treatment had different weighting, since the education program in either one of those settings is identical, but they do. They have day treatment gets a 1.75 and a residential gets 2. So it was clear amongst all the stakeholders that's something, and I think we've moved that forward in an LC last year, but given circumstances with budgets, it didn't move forward. But so again, that comes up as a key thing, if as one recommendation to level the playing field and have an equitable weighting. Another one is to eliminate the use of the net operating expenditures. If you're familiar with the way this program is funded, we use the state average net operating expenditure for all districts, and then it's distributed based on the net operating expenditure for the individual district, or if it's an ESD, the consortium of the districts. So
it creates discrepancies already because, and somewhere, one of the appendixes, it listed on there, it can be a $3,000 per student difference, in, and yet this operating those costs for the students, those high needs, we just feel it doesn't meet the equity that we're looking for. So that would be another part of that revising the long-term care and treatment program. The other key thing was to look at having it mirror, rather than using a net operating expenditure, have it to mirror more closely the state school fund. And that's why when Brian Reeder was a part of those meetings, we looked at, so how might that work in that sense? So those are kind of the key pieces around the first one, around revising how we, the funding formula.
Representative Dimbrough.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Julie, just following up the point about the net cost or
net operating expenditures.
The net operating expenditures. So the assumption there is that the cost of delivering the education in the long-term programs is that is going to be pretty much the same statewide, and so students should be getting the same amount. That what differs there is, you know, the overall expenses of the district. But in this respect, that's irrelevant. Is
correct.
That, is that that's essentially what you're saying?
Correct.
Okay. And in the same way that with the day treatment versus residential, because we're, although there are different costs because some are residential and some are not, the educational part of it should be pretty much the same, whether it's day treatment or residential. Is that right?
Co-chairs and Representative Dimbrough, you're actually exactly right.
Okay.
There's other costs that don't come to our department for that, but the education model is the same. The difference is some kids go home at night and others stay over, and that residential is not something that we pick up as a cost.
As I look at the report here, and quite detailed, and thank you for that. I'm looking at, I had it here, I'm not scrolling fast enough, where you named the individuals that were in attendance, and then you've also listed out the four individual meetings and the, what the goal and the purpose of those four meetings were, and they were very distinct. On meeting number two, I'm not doing very well here at looking for the... who was in attendance. Thank you. So as I look at the long-term care and treatment work group membership, and certainly the least attended meeting was the subgroup for meeting number two, mm-hmm. which was about some funding pieces. And what I see on there, and I'm hoping that you can help me understand how those people were chosen. What I'm seeing here is a group from Clackamas ESD, Springfield School District, and then Intermountain ESD, and then Trillium, and three advocates. What I don't see there, and sitting on a school board in the past, business directors are incredibly important to the process, and I'm not seeing a school district business director unless it's one of the two Springfield people.
It
so
is.
Talk to me about the construct of that meeting, who was there, why they were there, and how they were chosen to be there.
Clackamas is a business manager.
Co-chair Springer and committee, who did you say first?
Don Staley from Clackamas is a business manager.
Don Staley is a business, many of the folks, and Springfield, the two that were, I'm trying to look at who cared that day.
It says Matt Coleman and Keith Hollenbeck.
Right. Keith is not, in fact, he's really not, he's kind of a consultant. But in many of those meetings, we did have their business team from Springfield did participate in most, Springfield, in most of the meetings, as well as Don Staley from Clackamas ESD. We didn't specify what their job roles were on here, but we certainly had that cross-reference because we did pick fiscal people with a background on more on the fiscal nature for that particular one, that meeting, and that's why we invited Sue's team. And I was thinking there's more on here than Sue's because it may be on the second page that I don't have.
Okay,
do you want to add to that, Nancy?
Go ahead, Nancy, if you can clarify
Madam
that
Chair,
for me.
Chair Monroe and members of the committee, we actually didn't invite anybody it would have been open to everybody if they wanted to come. Actually, I think people did not feel that was something they wanted to react to, it is what I'm going to guess. If everybody had come that had come to the first meeting, we would have figured out what to do with everybody. It was just that we knew some people were interested. Our legislative advocates definitely were interested. I quite frankly didn't know that Clackamas CSD would come at that point. They just, you know, they came. Somebody else said, you know, the Springfield people, I think it's Lynn, I can't remember if it's Lee. The business manager said, you know, Keith and Matt are going to bring things back to me. I asked about who, that was a big difference with Springfield bringing so many the first time and the second time. And they said they would just share. So it really wasn't a hand-selected. The only people we hand-selected were Sue McGlashan and Brian Reeder to be at the meeting.
Can I interject? Because, you know, it's been a while since we had that meeting, so I was trying to meet. What we did in the first meeting, we had a lot of people give us input on that fiscal. So that was to take that, and I think from that meeting, we just didn't really know how it might play out with how we're currently funded. And so they had agreed for us to bring a smaller group, bring Brian in, kind of throw out some things, and if he could guide us in how those recommendations might be able to play out. Then the next two meetings spent a lot of time with all of the larger groups saying, here's what, and Brian came to those meetings, here's how it might look, either whether we use state school fund or if we change to some other mechanism. So the feedback actually came through those larger meetings. It was just really looking at all of the pieces that came out of the first one with a smaller group and with people who, and I'm going to use Brian and Sue, who really know what's available to us or how we might change that funding different than what we're currently doing that still wouldn't cost a significant amount of dollars.
Okay, so I'm just going to loop back to make sure that I'm clear, because I heard the term once, the people we picked, mm-hmm. and then I heard that anybody could be on it. So just because, I mean, there's a stark contrast in that meeting talking about the money, and usually that's when people show up, is when you're talking about the money. That's when people show up, and there's less than half the attendance there. So would it be true to say anybody who wanted to participate in that second meeting was more than welcome to participate in that second meeting?
Yes, it was advertised.
Okay.
Yes, Representative Springer. We let them know what we were going to do. I think they were sitting back, though, and I would say even my attendance of not really knowing, I can say, gee, we'd like to do this, but is it really possible? How does it impact districts if we were to move to the state school fund and, you know, looking at this? And so it was really just looking at those who would have the expertise and wanted to. But after that, everything, that meeting was almost then presented to all the folks who came on the 3rd, so anyone that didn't come or participate would be able to understand all of the different options that kind of Brian put forth for us.
Okay. Senator Gerard?
Yeah, just a point of clarification. I'm not always the fastest on the uptake here, but I was just kind of following along with Representative Dembrough's comments. And I'm having a hard time understanding how economies of scale don't enter into the equation. In short, if you implement something in Gilliam County, to me the costs are going to be, especially when travel and everything is involved, is going to be higher per student than if you implemented the same program at a per student cost in Multnomah County. But what I'm saying is economies of scale usually play into the equation, and if I followed his line of questioning correctly, the conclusion was it didn't. So I'm trying to rationalize that in my head, and it just comes up blip, 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 beep.
So, co-chairs and Senator Gerard, I don't know how that plays out, but I can give you actuals. That would make sense in common sense, but an example would be Central Point, which is a much smaller district. Their NOE is a much smaller number than it would be in Multnomah. So I'm not sure how the NOE comes into play with all the figures that go fiscally into determining that, but it seems like our smaller districts have a smaller NOE than our larger districts, which you would think would be having a greater economy of scale. So that's, you know, like I say, I don't have all the ins and outs on how what all budget figures or how that is calculated.
Maybe you can make an appointment to come see me. I don't want to take any more of the board's time, but that just makes no sense to me. So I'm just one of those guys that kind of like to put two and two together and come up with the right answer. So I you could very well be right, and something's just not clicking in my brain to tell me what's going on. But I just, it's short-circuiting and just saying that doesn't make sense. So, okay?
I'll do that.
All right.
Other questions?
Any other questions or comments?
I do, Madam Chair. Actually, this is kind of a big picture question. I'm not sure any of you can answer it, perhaps the superintendent. And that's many of the community partners that are involved in the long-term care education programs. Under the new OEIB, are they going to have a role in being part of the conversation? I know there's been talk about a new group being set up for youth education. I mean, we have early learning, and the question is, what do you do with the older kids? Where do they fit in? And so I'm just wondering, are these programs going to be involved in that that youth education component?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we're hoping so. We had that conversation with some of these members. There are a couple places that I see. One is definitely if we have districts that or ESDs that have contracts for these programs, part of their compact should include these students and their outcomes as well. Second of all, it is the Youth Development Council that I'm thinking needs to be a tie to this. It's not something we've put out on paper. We've done talking, especially with someone like Lynn Saxon, who has programs and a variety of them, and seeing how that fits together, but until we see that youth council and what recommendations, I do believe this would be a major partner in that, and definitely think that's where it would be.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or comments? I opened a work. Did you have
ready for a motion?
Well, I am. I was just going to say I opened a work session on both the report and the other funds expenditure limitations. So if you want to make your motion on the report, Senator, we'll do that and then move on to the expenditure limitation.
Okay, Madam Co-Chair, I would move that we acknowledge the receipt of the report on long-term care and treatment.
Motion's been made to accept or acknowledge receipt of the report on long-term care and treatment. Any discussion on that motion? Any objection to that motion? Motion carries. And we need a carrier for that to full Ways and Means. Thank you, Representative Girard. That's so kind of you. Representative Girard will carry that.
There's one of us left.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious who I was looking at there.
I hide behind, see.
Okay, so I opened a work session on both, so let's move forward knowing that we have 12 minutes remaining. Move forward on the expenditure limitation conversation.
Madam Chair Springer, Co-Chair Monroe, members of the committee, for the record, Nancy Latini, Department of Education. You just heard about the budget note for the long-term care and treatment program and the subsequent recommendations from the department. We will continue to work on those recommendations as we've started already, and I'm not going to repeat the purpose of the programs or describe the students that are in these programs since you just heard that. This limitation request is separate from the report on the budget note that you just heard. We're going to focus on the same students, on the same programs, but it's a different conversation. As you know, long-term care and treatment education programs are currently funded with general fund appropriations, the state school fund as other funds, and a limited amount of federal funds from IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, and from Title I, Neglected and Delinquent Youth Funds. Currently, the request for the expenditure limitation is $5.6 million, and this does include the cost for the additional students that were made eligible for these funds by the passage of Senate Bill 170 during the last session. Our department is confident in the counts of the funded slots, and while we've been confident in the monthly counts of the students being served. The programs, the slots still remain in flux because so much is going on with human services and with OYA right now. So what we've done is we've coordinated a process where on a quarterly basis we will be meeting and talking directly with both the Department of Human Services and the Oregon Youth Authority to confirm those slots with each agency and also talk about what changes might be in the winds that's going to change the slots or impact our programs. Again, Julie York is here from the as a Director of Interagency Education Services if you have some specific questions to ask about this request.
I'm not seeing any. Monica, do you have anything that you need to add to that conversation before we look at taking the motion?
I don't believe so, unless there were specific questions of clarification, Madam Chair.
I'm not seeing any. So I'm looking for a motion.
Madam Co-Chair, I would recommend that we approve the request for an increase in other funds expenditure limitation by $5,610,036.
Okay, the motion's been made for another funds expenditure limitation of $5,610,036 for long-term care and treatment. Any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Okay. Not seeing any, the motion carries. And I'm going to close the work session. Oh, I need a carrier to full Ways and Means. Did you lean forward volunteering, Senator Monroe? It looked like it to me.
I'm your fallback guy. I mean, if you can't get anybody else to do it.
Actually, Senator Girard is very eagerly volunteering for that.
He wants to be the vice chair.
So thank you, Senator Girard.
Eager is quite the right
No, it looked eager. And so Senator Girard will be carrying that to full Ways and Means. And I am going to close the work sessions on Department of Ed report on long-term care and treatment and the other funds expenditure limitation.
Yes.
And then I need to open a work session. Do I need to open a work session on that?
No. You might just wish to announce that you're not going to hold that hearing.
I do wish to announce.
Yes, so don't
that obviously we're not holding the hearing. No. Most everybody up here knew that on the health licensing agency fee ratification, and we will be taking that up tentatively on Wednesday. Anything else, Monica? Okay.
Just, Madam Chair,
yes.
You know, in terms of the calendar for the committee, do we have a sense of when we're going to start looking at bills? I know that there are a lot of bills that have been set mm-hmm. down here, education related, that don't necessarily have much in the way of fiscal, but because they involve task forces or something like that. Do we have a sense of when we're going to start looking at those? Or those all
Madam
part
Chair,
of larger
and Representative
conversations?
Dembo, I have it on good authority that you'll be hearing them before March 1st.
Or not.
No, honestly,
is that your best answer?
At I'll this point, that is my best chance.
I'd like to censor Mrs. Brown.
My understanding, members of the subcommittee, my understanding is the co-chairs of the full committee are actively reviewing that list, but I don't have any information from them on when they're going to give you the go-ahead to move them. So hopefully, you know, Monday would be probably a good day, but I'll let you know as soon as I know.
But you're quite certain it's prior to March 1st?
Before March 1st, I'm thinking they're going to do something.
Not to make light of your question. Okay, anything else?
As usual, Madam Co-Chair, your subcommittee co-chairs will move just as rapidly as as we're given authority from our big bosses.
Yes, we will. Okay, we are adjourned.
We look to you.
Thank you.